Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the lawyers when we come back. You know, those who already walk submissively will say that there's no cause for alarm. But submissiveness is not our heritage. The First Amendment was designed to allow rebellion to remain as our heritage, and the Constitution was designed to keep government off the backs of the people. The Bill of Rights was added to keep the precincts of belief and of expression of the press, of political and social activities free from government surveillance. Now, you know, I wished I'd have thought of that, but that quotation isn't from George Gordon. It's from Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas. Now, you know, our princes, our politicians beller in the halls of Congress, and they're constantly bellering for more taxes, more spending, and more gun control. But you and I haven't heard anything intelligent come out of a politician's mouth in more than 75 years, now have we? You know, that's why I contend that the only real reason, logic, or common sense left in America comes from our courts, not from the political process, the politicians, the lawyers, or the bureaucrats. Now, old Mayor Rothschild summed it up with a flair when he said, "You give me the money power, and I care not who makes the laws." Well, let me echo that by saying, "You give me the judicial power, and I care not who makes the laws either," because the real power in America is in our courts, not in our politics. Now, if you'd like to tap into that power of the courts, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number's 417-273-4967, and be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Now, Courtroom Strategy and Procedure, our school, is available on compact disc for adult home education. That's not free. And if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, this week we've been talking about lawyers. Some of it good, some of it bad. Most of it's bad. Lawyers are criminals. Lawyers are criminals acting in a criminal activity, a criminal profession, prohibited in the Scripture, and really spurned by Jesus of Nazareth in Luke 11, 37 through 54. He had no good words for lawyers. None. Zero, zilch, zip, that's it. And that's because they're criminals, just like bankers. In fact, all of the professions I showed you a little earlier are criminal activities. All professionals are criminals. They violate the law of God. Now, of course, they're not criminals in the eyes of the Roman civil law, the law of the legislature. And the legislature, remember, was set up to amend or abolish or to act or rescind the laws of God. That's the only purpose for the legislature. You see, God gave us the law out at Mount Sinai. It's a complete law. It has 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments organized into 133 titles of law. It's complete. He said it was complete, and furthermore instructed us not to add nor to take away from it. And then he told us 172 times to practice that law in the Scripture. 172 times. He says, "You practice my commandments. You keep my commandments." Well, you know, we figured out a long time ago that God had his head up the wrong end of his anatomy and didn't know what he was talking about, so we decided that we would fix all of his mistakes. And for the last 4,000 years, that's what we've been busy doing. That's why we elect Dianne Feinstein, Barbara Boxer, Arlen Specter, Ted Kennedy, we elect these people to our Congress so that they can alter, reform, amend, or abolish the Ten Commandments and the statutes and judgments of God. That's their only function. That's their only purpose. That's what they do, and they do it well. They have abolished the Bible and abolished the Ten Commandments from our society. Tell me they're not on top of it. Tell me they're not doing their job. Now, a fellow by the name of Jack writes me a letter from Canada, and he says, "Hey, listen, I can't get any justice up here in Canada." And I said in the last program, last thing I said, "Well, listen, justice isn't the name of the game. This is an adversarial system." He says, "They don't play fair. Fair isn't the way we win the game, Jack. Government doesn't play fair. Government isn't there to play fair. Government isn't there to serve you. Government's there to serve itself. Lawyers are entrepreneurs. Most of your government representatives, most of your elected politicians are lawyers. And they're not in that legislative body for no good reason. They enact the laws that they want that benefit them, benefit their corporations, benefit their supporters, benefit their contributors. And that's the way the game is. You know, just wake up and smell the coffee, get used to it. Now, I'm not complaining about it because I know how to play that game also. So I play that game and I get along pretty well. Now, Jack, there's a bunch of rules that you've probably never heard about, but when you went into court, remember when you said here that they brought you in here on these trumped-up charges? Actually, Jack, I don't think the charges were as near as trumped-up as you thought they were, but did you notice the judge told you that you needed a lawyer? I mean, he drilled that into you, didn't he? I mean, he drummed it into you. You need a lawyer, Jack! Get a lawyer, Jack! All right. And that's because if you get a lawyer, you declare yourself to be incompetent, a ward of the court, and unable to manage your own legal affairs, and therefore it gives the judge total control over you. So if you went in pro se, you did the right thing, but for all the wrong reasons, because when you went in there, it's a mystery. You didn't know how to play the game. You didn't know the rules. How in the hell can you win a game, Jack, that you don't know the rules to? Then, remember, Garrett wrote a letter, and he says, "Well, give me the history of this law. Tell me where it comes from. How did this develop?" So at the end of the last program, I thought, well, okay, we'll get into the history of it. And I said, well, it starts at Mount Sinai. Mount Sinai. And at Mount Sinai, God gave us the law. Gave us all the law that any nation needs. And it's a very short direct law, Ten Commandments. That's our Constitution. It's the basis of all the statutes and judgments. Every statute and every judgment that you see in the Bible comes from the Ten Commandments. That's how simple this whole process is. And it's summed up in this phrase that says, love your neighbor as yourself. Very simply put, if you wouldn't want somebody to do that to you, then don't do that to somebody else. And if everybody behaved like that, what do you need policemen for? What do you need all these lawmakers and legislatures for? Now, God gave us a monetary system. He gave us gold and silver, and he buried it in a hole in the ground, just like Easter eggs. And he says, okay, now go dig it out. Go to work. So our money should be backed by labor. The amount of labor that goes into producing the gold and silver then is equal to the gold and silver which you then trade for boards or cars or tires or batteries or gasoline or food, clothing, and shelter or whatever you want to trade it for. We woke up one day and said, God, we could really make a killing if we could get people to take paper money. We can make paper a whole lot easier than we can make gold. That's why we have paper money. It doesn't serve any useful purpose except to steal from people. That's why it's prohibited. That's why there's two statutes that tell you to use just weights and balances. And the penalty for not using just weights and balances is the income tax. And that's what the tax is on. It's on the unjust weights and balances. They're not taxing your property. Now, God gave us property and told us to deal in property. It was you and me, partner, back about 1 Samuel chapter 8, about 300 years after Moses. The people woke up and said, well, we want a king like all the nations around you. God said, that's a bad mistake, boys and girls. Wake up, smell the coffee. Don't do that. And the people said, nevertheless, we will have a king. So God said, okay, let me get out of the way of your happiness and success. But when you get a belly full of this sucker over here and you cry out to me, I will not hear you. All right, so that's where we are today. And that's Garrett. Garrett wrote me a letter, so I want to know a little history. Well, we have had, Garrett, we have had from about 1000 BC until last night at 5 o'clock a series of governments, kings, potentates, dictators, some good, some bad. We've tried democracy. We've tried republics. We've tried socialism, capitalism, communism. I mean, we have tried just about everything that you can imagine, and we're still not happy. We weren't happy with God. We weren't happy with communism, socialism, Nazism. We haven't been happy with anything that we've tried. All right, so we're not happy with our politics. We're not happy with our laws. I don't know exactly why, but that's the history of it. And from time to time, we've had some guys run out here and make some changes. You know, when they got a belly full of it, they'd rebel against the government. Over time, we learned a lot. And so that brings us up to about 1787. And based upon all of the governments and all of the experiments that mankind has been through, our founding fathers, you know, guys like James Madison, Monroe, Washington, and Adams, and Mason, and Franklin, the rest of them, you know, they got together and said, look, let's avoid all those mistakes. Let's see if we can craft a government over here that'll solve some of these problems. And so they gave us our Constitution. And they based the Constitution on the Ten Commandments and put 22 principles of that law into our federal Constitution. But they put in a couple of Achilles heels, you know, like Article 1, Section 8, which is the Commerce Clause. You know, that's like trying to clean up New York City, but you want to license all of the brothels. I'm not exactly clear to me why our founding fathers did that. They should have known that commerce was a bad policy, but then, you know, there you are. But they banned, you know, things like paper money, and they gave us gold and silver coin, and they adopted at the mouth of two witnesses shall the matter be established, and so on. Okay, so that brings us up to about 1900. Now, about 1900, we decided to make a radical shift. We decided to adopt communism. Communism was first introduced to the world in 1848. Actually, it goes back several thousand years, but they didn't call it communism then. But communism was established, you know, the name communist, about 1848 with a guy named Karl Marx, and he delivered a treatise to the International Socialist Union in Paris, France that year, and he won the competition. And so by about 1900, we got hot and heavy after this thing of free education for all children in public schools. 10th plank. 1913, you know, the income tax, 2nd plank. Central bank, 5th plank. Social security, 1935. 8th plank, so on. So we have now adopted communism here in the United States. You guys have it up in Canada, too. And at the same time that we did that, we adopted the Roman civil law over this period of time, starting about 1900. And we have slowly but surely been eradicating the Ten Commandments, the laws of God, the statutes, the common law, and the justice system. And we have put in its place communism in politics, and we have eliminated the Ten Commandments and replaced it with the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. We've instituted public schools in place of private education and so on. And so here we are today. How do you like it? Want to cry out to Jesus and pray for some relief? Like I said, you can save your breath. Now, here's Jack's solution. Jack, what you need is to know how to play the game. And to play the game, you have to play it by the rules. Now, down here in the States, we have what we call the rules of civil and criminal procedure. Every state has it. And I'm sure that every province of Canada has it. And British Columbia, more likely, is going to have it. They practice Anglo-Saxon administration. And the guy who can play the game by the rules is the guy that's going to win most often. Now, remember, we're presuming that you're innocent. I mean, you know, if you go out and rob a bank and then say, well, they brought me in here on some trumped-up charge called bank robbery over here, and they've got you on the video camera, you know, that's a little tough to win, Jack. But assuming that they've charged you with bank robbery and you aren't the guy that robbed the bank, that's fairly easy to win. And there are rules that we go by. And the reason that you're having problems in court is because you can't follow the rules. And the reason you can't follow the rules is because you don't even know what they are. Now, there's 28 things that you need to know. 28 things in courtroom strategy and procedure that you need to know and then put it into practice. And if you can do that, you can win in court and you can win regularly. Better yet, you can avoid going into court, avoid wasting the time, and avoid the prosecution altogether. I mean, it's a wild new idea, but I think it's worth considering. Now, let's bring two other people into this discussion. A letter comes from Lynn, and she says, I know in your Mosaic Law teaching, you show that the law of YHVH still stands. So can you answer for me, what law did Yahshua fulfill in his death? Let me underline that. The question is, what law did the Messiah fulfill in his death? Could it be Numbers 5, verses 11 through 31, with the law of jealousy and the drinking of the bitter cup, as this has to do with a wife who has a jealous husband? YHVH says 12 times, I am a jealous God. I really want to know. Please respond. Okay, Lynn, let's respond. The answer to the second question is no. The statute in Numbers 5, verses 11 through 31, doesn't have anything to do with the fulfillment of some law that Jesus fulfilled in order to take away or to rescind some portion of the law. It's a statute. It deals with jealousy. If you've got a wife that you think is out screwing around on you, what you do is you go to the priest and say, okay, well, no, I think that this woman needs to be stoned to death for adultery, and here's why. And so there's a ceremony that you go through for the express purpose of having God identify her as either guilty or innocent. And if you did that today in 2006, it would work like a shot. Nobody does it. But that law doesn't have anything to do with what law did Yahshua fulfill in his death. Lynn, what made you think that Jesus fulfilled any law in his death to start with? Think about that for a second. Turn over here to Matthew 5. And in verse 17, Jesus says, think not that I've come to destroy the law or the prophets. I'm not come to destroy, but to fulfill. So what would make you think that he fulfilled some law? He said, I came to fulfill the law. Now, the idea got into your head when you went to church and the preacher said, oh, these laws are abolished and done away with and nailed to the cross with Jesus because they're ceremonial, or because there's 15 reasons why these laws are abolished and done away with. And that's the Ten Commandments. They're all abolished and done away with. You don't have to practice the Ten Commandments. Where did you learn that? Down on the docks or down at O'Houlihan's bar? No, you learned that in church. Didn't learn it down at the bar. Those guys don't talk about religion in the bar. They talk about religion in church. The idea that the law has been abolished and that Jesus fulfilled the law and you don't have to do that anymore came from church. It's a lying hypocrisy, but then, you know, there's a lot of lies that go on in the world. He went on, he said a little bit more here. He said in verse 18, for truly I say unto you, until heaven and earth pass, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled. Now a jot is a dot, and a tittle is a crossed T. So let's just take a look at number 7, thou shalt not commit adultery. There's a couple of T's in there that have crosses on them, and in the word commit there's an I that has a dot on it. Jesus said that that dot and those crossed T's would not disappear from that law until it's all fulfilled. When was the last time you fulfilled that, Lynn? Now, you could sit there and say, well, I never have committed adultery. Oh, good for you. That's terrific. Okay, well, there's a couple of the rest of us out here. We're not up to your standards, and we've been out here practicing adultery for a long time. And until all of us fulfill that law, it isn't going to be rescinded. How do I know that? He goes on, he says a little more in verse 19. He says, whosoever, Lynn, you, me, the preacher in church, whosoever therefore shall break one of these least commandments and shall teach men so, he shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whosoever shall do and teach them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. Notice he addresses the least commandment. Well, let's think about the least commandment here for a minute. If you've been listening to this series, number 4, remember the Sabbath day is a capital felony. I told you about one guy was out logging on Saturday, and God had him stoned to death. I wouldn't call that a least commandment. When you take a look at the first one, you shall have no other gods before me, that's a capital felony. You shall not make unto you any graven image, that's a capital felony. You shall not take the name of the Eternal your God in vain, that is not a capital felony. Number 4, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, that's a capital felony. Honor your father and mother, that's a capital felony. Thou shalt not kill, that's a capital felony. Thou shalt not commit adultery, that's a capital felony. Thou shalt not steal, that's not a capital felony. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor, that can be a capital felony, but typically it isn't. And thou shalt not covet, that's not a capital felony. 3 of them are not capital felonies, and 7 of them are. Doesn't sound like to me that the Ten Commandments taken as a whole would qualify as the least commandment. Jesus said, if you don't practice, and if you teach other people that they should break, that they don't have to practice even the least commandment. Now, I've got one over here that's kind of least. Let me show it to you. It's Leviticus 19:19. It's kind of least. It says, you shall keep my statutes. You shall not let your cattle gender with a diverse kind. You shall not let your cattle interbreed with a diverse kind. And you shall not sow your field with mingled seed. You shall not hybridize your seed. And neither shall a garment mingled with linen and woolen come upon you. Don't buy a pair of socks that's got 20% nylon reinforced heel and toe in it. Now, those are kind of, you know, if you break those three laws there in Leviticus 19:19, those aren't capital felonies. Those aren't going to get you thrown into the lake of fire. Those aren't going to get you, it's going to get you called least in the kingdom. If you can qualify for the kingdom of God, you're going to be called the dog catcher instead of the mayor of New York. I mean, you know, it's up to you. It's a choice to make. So to answer your question, not a single law that has ever been enacted by God Almighty, recorded in the Bible, has ever been rescinded, revoked, repealed, or abolished. Not a single one. None. Zero. Zilch. And any preacher that tells you that is a liar. Worse than that, as old Mark Twain would tell you, he's not just a liar, but a damned liar. All right, now with that out of the way, I've answered your question. And you said that you really wanted to know, so now I really told you. How's that? Now, there's about 50 other places here in the Bible that tells you the same thing, that the law isn't abolished or done away with, but I think that that one right out of Jesus' own mouth. Let's think about it one more step here, Lynn, and let's mull it over a little bit. Let's suppose that you come down here to visit me, and you're driving into town, and you get a little heavy on the throttle, and you're speeding a little bit, and Ranger Rick comes out and gives you a ticket. And you come back here to the farm, and you say, hey, Gordon, you people ain't very kind and gentle down here. Why, this cop gave me a ticket for speeding. And I say, Lynn, give me that ticket. And I take the ticket, and I go into Judge Jacobs, and I say, Judge Jacobs, I can't believe the rude arrogance of the Highway Patrol in Missouri giving my friend Lynn a ticket. So I pay the ticket for you. I pay the fine and the court costs. Now, tell me, Lynn, does that change the speed law of Missouri? Would you say that because I went in and fulfilled the law for you that the speed limit in Missouri now has been repealed? It's abolished? Nailed to the cross with George? What the hell kind of nonsense is this? You mean to tell me that because Jesus wasn't going down to Flo's whorehouse to set us an example that we should follow and didn't commit adultery, that the law that says thou shalt not commit adultery has now been repealed? Have we taken leave of our senses? I tell you, boys and girls, you'd be money ahead if you stayed the hell out of those churches and spend more time in the bar. Nobody taught you that kind of crap in the bar. Okay. Now, with that out of the way, I got another letter from a guy who asked me a legal question. And so, in order to answer both Jack and Garrett, let's take a look at a little longer question and let's see, well, how do you actually put this into practice? You know, I come on here and I say, well, you know, I'm not complaining about the law. I'm not complaining about the judges. I'm not complaining about the parliament. Hey, listen, I don't do business with the banks. Why would I complain about the banks? I don't do business with the mafia or the Cosa Nostra. I'm not having any complaints about the mafia. Yeah, that's a wicked, evil bunch of guys, and they probably ought to be abolished and done away with. But, hey, listen, if I go out and make a loan with some loan shark and then don't pay him, I could expect to have a visit from somebody. I got to tell you a little story here. An old friend of mine, his name is Stan Nielsen. He's probably dead by now. He's an old man, 30 years ago. But old Stan and I used to fly up to Reno quite often. Well, old Stan, you know, he liked to gamble and watch the shows and eat dinner, and then we'd fly back home. So, old Stan was telling me about a friend of his, and he gave me a little piece of warning. He says, now listen, if you want to gamble up here in Reno, that's fine. And they'll be sure to take your mark. Your mark, that's your check, you know. But he said, my God, whatever happens, don't ever let your check bounce. Because a friend of mine, his check bounced, and two guys walked into his office down on Broadway in Oakland. Walked right into his office, picked him up out of his chair, walked out of the office with him, put him in their car, drove him down to their bank, his bank, and took him inside. And they let him know in no uncertain terms that if that check, which was only $5,000, bounced again, he didn't have to make the next one good. I think that was a veiled threat. I think that was a threat that said, if this check don't clear, you won't live long enough to write the next one. So I always tuck that one away in my heart. You know, if you want to play in the big leagues, you got to be able to field hard hit ground balls to shortstop and turn a double play. And if you can't do that, then you ought to get off the field. So, another guy by the name of Nate writes me a letter. Now, here's Nate. He says, I've been listening to your law episodes for several months now, and I've been trying to save up enough Fed notes to exchange for gold because I want to learn how to free myself. But I'm confused on this gold thing. Last year, I bought a 1 ounce gold Kruger Rand, and the reason I bought a gold coin without any dollar amount stamped on it was because a guy I have been learning from told me not to get one with a dollar amount stamped on it because if I'm arrested, they can just take it away and give me a $50 Federal Reserve piece of paper since I will have been compensated in their twisted logic. So what I'm asking you is this. Do you prefer 4.5 ounces of gold eagles or just gold in general? Does it have to have a dollar amount stamped on it? Like, for example, would you accept the 1 ounce gold Krugerrand in the 4.5 ounces? And then the second question, he says, and also aside from that, what's best for the safety of my wealth and property? The ability to exchange it for goods when the STHF, I like that one. That's a good one, Nate. The STHF. I mulled that one over and mulled it over. What in the hell is H? What is STHF? It's the S word. When the S hits the fan. Do you get that? The ability to exchange it for goods when the S hits the fan. To get coins with no currency amount on them, such as the Krugerrand, or to get coins with currency on them, like $50 gold eagles and $1 silver eagles. Only ask because when the S hits the fan, I'm afraid that some people or merchants will not accept Krugerrands or other 1 ounce gold coins if they don't have a currency amount stamped on it. But even so, like the $50 gold eagle, it costs over $500 to get a coin that's only worth $50. So then, what if they try ripping me off by saying, well, it's only worth $50 when obviously I paid $500 or more for it? Forgive me for being such an ignorant fool, but in part two down here, it looks like I'm getting screwed both ways. So what do you suggest me do if I want to invest safely in my wealth? And also, I received your general law CD package, and I want to extend my sincere thanks and blah, blah, blah. And he builds me up like I walk on water, and I really like that. Send me more letters and tell me how great I am, would you? Everybody likes to be stroked. All right, so now Nate asks a legal question concerning gold and silver coin. Now, to answer Nate's question, I went to Title 31 of the U.S. Code, Section 5101, 102, 103, 5, 7, 9, 11, and 12. In other words, it's the Gold Coinage Act. It's the Coinage Act of 1986. Excuse me. It's the Coinage Act of 1964, codified in 1986. And to get the answers for that. Now, in my courtroom strategy and procedure school, we go through such things as this to teach you how to do legal research. Legal research. Now, you went to school, didn't you? Nate, you went to school, didn't you? And did they teach you legal research in study hall? Did they teach you legal research in auto shop? In ag shop? You know, we go to school and they don't teach us how to handle money, do they? Well, they teach us all about democracy, teach us all about the United Nations, and social crap. You know, they teach us all about that, but they don't teach us how to handle money, which is something that you're going to do every day of your life. You were doing it in the ninth grade, you're doing it today, and you're going to do it every day of your life until you die. You're going to be handling money, and nobody ever taught you how to do that. Don't you think that your education was a little short there? Kind of what I thought. Okay, hang on here. I got to find my piece of paper, and I got to give you this reminder. If I don't do that, people are going to get after me. I can't believe I can't find my piece of paper here. Oh, here it is. Remember this reminder I give you every day, so that you don't blame the station manager or somebody else over here for these crazy off-the-wall comments. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law. From the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement only. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. If you'd like one, just call the law school and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, Nate asks a question. He heard somebody tell him that if he was arrested and jailed, and they took some money away from him or in some other circumstance that he doesn't specify, that they might take his $50 one-ounce gold eagle that he paid $500 for, and then when they give his property back, give him a $50 bill or a check for $50. Now, that actually happened to me once. It wasn't over a gold coin. It was over a silver dollar. And it was an aberration on the part of the jailer at the Ada County Jail, which I took to court, and I got resolved. And it's against the law to do that, and no, you cannot do that. Now, policemen and public officials break the law quite often, and they get away with it. Now, I mentioned that to you in one of this series of programs when I said that the EPA in Idaho charged me with air pollution, and there were no laws in Idaho regarding air pollution at that time. Very common practice. It goes on all the time. A little legal research on my part would have solved that problem. But, Nate, I was just as dumb as you were, and I had to go hire Ben Rice and pay him $4,000 to go do what I should have been able to do myself, because I went to public school. And, Nate, did they teach anything about law in public school? Oh, yeah. In driver's ed, they taught you had to have a driver's license, register your car, pay your insurance, and pay all your fines and tickets. And they taught you about that. Never taught you about anything regarding law or legal research, now did they? So I did the legal research, and I'm just directing your attention. The questions that you're asking are found in the U.S. Code, Title 31, Section 5101. That's where it starts. Here's what the law says. It says, United States money is expressed in dollars, dimes or tenths, cents or hundredths, and mills or thousands. A dime is a tenth of a dollar, a cent is a hundredth of a dollar, and a mill is a thousandth of a dollar. So there's the definition of a dollar. Got it right out of Congress. If you can't believe Congress, who can you believe? Section 5102. The standard troy pound of the National Bureau of Standards of the Department of Commerce shall be the standard used to ensure that the weight of the United States coins conforms to specifications in Section 5112 of this title. Okay, so we're going to use the National Bureau of Standards of the Department of Commerce. They have the weights and measures that we use here in this country. And that's the standard that we're going to weigh and measure all of our gold and silver coins by. Okay? Section 5103, legal tender. United States coins and currency, including Federal Reserve notes and circulating notes of Federal Reserve banks and national banks, are legal tender for all debts, public charges, taxes, and dues. Period. Last sentence, foreign gold or silver coins are not legal tender for debts. All right, so there's your statute. Answers both questions. Question one, would I prefer to have U.S. gold coin? Answer, yes. Why? Because it's legal tender for all debts, public and private. See how simple that is? Foreign coins are not. Your second question, will you accept Krugerrands? Yes, I will. I don't like them. I don't like to, but I can. A guy sent me two lumps of gold the other day, just two little bullion lumps of gold. Now, there's a problem with that. They have to be acid. I ran out of acid here the other day. Got to have nitric acid to stick them into to see if they're even gold. And I didn't really analyze it. The guy sent it to me, and I've known him for a long time. I presume they're gold. They probably are, but they're not stamped. They don't have any weights or measures on them. They're just two lumps of gold. Their real cash value for two lumps of gold like that, assuming that they're somewhere out in the neighborhood of two nines or three nines fine, it's spot less 20%. So take 20% off spot, and that's their cash value. And that's because they've been refined. Now, if you've got placer gold, just a little bag of gold, it's worth 75% of spot. And that's because gold is never pure. And I'm assuming that these two gold slugs are probably pretty pure. They've probably been refined out, but they're probably not 4/9 fine. So they have to be melted down, so you can only sell them for the melt price, so they're worth 20% under spot. That's their cash value. That's their Federal Reserve note value. Now, if you've got Krugerrands, they're worth the spot price less a couple of bucks for handling when you go to cash them in. When you go to buy Krugerrands, you can buy them with less cnage, less commission than you can Canadian maples and Australians and U.S. Eagles and so on. So from that point of view, the Krugerrand is actually the better buy. Now, the reason that I prefer using these $50 and $25 and $10 and $5 gold coins is because they're legal tender for all debts, public and private, here in the United States. Now, your question number two says, well, Jesus, if I pay $500 for this coin, that is, you're working for $10 an hour and had to work 50 hours to buy this gold coin, and then I take it down and it's got $50 stamped on the front of it, and I give it to Walmart and they only give me $50 worth of goods, or 5 hours worth of goods, I take it in the shorts for 45 hours. Yeah, that's right, Nate, that's right. I wouldn't do that. That doesn't make any sense to me. In fact, you're better off with the paper, aren't you? All right, now, put on your thinking cap here and let's run through this. Notice here in section 5103, United States coins and currencies, including Federal Reserve notes and circulating notes of Federal Reserve banks and national banks, are legal tender for all debts, public charges, taxes, and dues. That's the statute that says that Federal Reserve notes have the same value as U.S. gold coins, which are marked $50 on. That comes right out of the Constitution, which gives the Congress the power, the authority, the capacity to make the weights and measures of our coin, and they've done that. So Congress has said that a $50 gold coin has no greater or lesser value than a $50 Federal Reserve note. Right there, section 5103. Now, most people would go pay a lawyer to explain that to them. I think if you just picked that up, Nate, and read that, I think they'd tell you the same thing it told me. It's in plain language, plain English. Now, if you've been to public school, you could have some problems. I don't deny that. But, you know, once you get to be about 30 or 40, sometimes, you know, we can overcome the handicaps imposed upon us by public school. You know, I'm a public school brat, and I've overcome, you know, not all of it, but a lot of that public school education. I can read that. It doesn't seem to pose a problem to me, and I'm a high school dropout. So if a high school dropout can read it, seems like to me you could. All right, now let's flip over here a couple more pages. We flip over a couple more pages here to about 5112. 5112, yeah. And it tells us here that a $50 gold coin is 32.7 millimeters in diameter and so on. Pretty soon we get down here to subpart G, and it says, for purposes of section 5132A1 of this title, all coins minted under subsection E of this section shall be considered to be numismatic items. Uh-huh. Collector coins, eh? Numismatic. Well, back in 1933, when Roosevelt closed the gold window and told us to turn our gold in over here, they accepted numismatic items. That's why we have old $20 double eagles today. Not all the people were dumb. Not all the people went down and gave their money to the bankers. Some of them hung on to them. Called them numismatic. Well, today they're all numismatic. All these brand new coins being minted every day out of the mint are numismatic. They're collector coins. And so it's a $50 coin that you pay $500 for because it's numismatic. See how simple that is? Now, the truth is the gold in the coin is worth a whole lot more than the $50. That's what the real truth is. But as far as Congress and the law is concerned, they call it numismatic. Furthermore, it's legal tender. Notice subsection part H. It says, the coins issued under this title shall be legal tender as provided in section 5103 of Title 31 of the United States Code. It has the same value as a $50 bill, $50 gold piece. So if you want to test it, you get your tax bill, you fill out your taxes, and you owe the government $1,000. Okay? So you run down and you give them two $50 gold pieces, which should be worth about $1,000 or maybe a little more. and you're expecting some change back, and they take the two $50 gold pieces for your $1,000 debt, and they say, now where's the other $900? And that's what you're complaining about. So why don't you take those two gold coins down to Joe the gold broker and have him give you $1,000 bills and some change, put the change in your back pocket and go down and give the IRS the $1,000 bills. Because it says in 5103, Nate, that the $50 bill has the same value as the $50 gold piece. I think that's what I would do. But there's an advantage that comes out of this. An advantage. Let me tell you what the advantage is. I'm over here at the feed store some time back. And I walked in and I said, hey, Charlie, what's the price of alfalfa pellets? And he said to me, well, they're $10 a sack. Or excuse me, $10 a 100, 50-pound sacks. Well, if they're $10 a 100 and there's 40 sacks, $5 each, or $10 a 100, 20-100 in a ton, so they're about $200 a ton. $200 a ton. So I said, okay, they're $200 a ton. So I said, well, and I pulled out a gold coin and I put it on the counter and I said, I've got a $50 gold piece here. How many tons do you think I could get with this $50 gold piece? Now, at that time, gold was about $300 an ounce. So I should have got about a ton and a half, you know, at $300 an ounce. But the coin is marked $50 on it very plainly, isn't it? Very plainly. And so Charlie looks at that and he says, well, how much is that worth? And I said, $50. And he said, well, you can get 500 pounds. And I said, oh, God, that ain't near enough. I'd like to get about a ton and a half. And he said, well, is that gold? And I said, yeah, yeah. He said, well, what do you have to pay for those gold coins? And I said, about $300. 300 Fed notes. Six $50 bills. And he said, oh, God, I wouldn't know what to do with that gold, George. You might as well just give me paper money. And I said, well, Mackie, let me run you through the drill. This guy's name ain't Charlie. It was old Mackie. And so, Mackie, I said, well, listen to this. Let's go to lunch and let me explain this to you. So we went to lunch, and while we're sitting there at Skeeter's, you know, having a sandwich, I said, now, you went into Tyndall, didn't you, last week, and wrote them a check for $100, didn't you? You wrote them a check for $100, and they brought you a ton, 2,000 pounds, of alfalfa pellets. So you paid about $5 a hundred, and you want to sell it to me for about $10 a hundred, don't you? And he said, yeah, that's about right. And I said, okay. So here's what you do. You give me a ton and a half of those alfalfa pellets. And I'm going to give you this $50 gold piece. And you ring up $50 in your cash register. Now, what that means is that you paid $150 and you bought a ton and a half of alfalfa pellets that under ordinary circumstances you would sell for $300, and then you would pay your taxes and your expenses and your overhead and labor and all the rest that goes with it, and you'd net about $50. And he said, yeah, that's about right. I said, okay. So in this transaction with me, you paid $150 for a ton and a half of alfalfa pellets. Now, I want you to give me the ton and a half of alfalfa pellets, and I want you to take my $50 gold piece. And I want you to ring it into the cash register. And when we got back, we did it, and he rang it into the cash register. I said, now put that $50 gold piece, lift the cash drawer, and you put that underneath there. Okay. Now, have you got $50? Have you got $50 in your wallet, in your pocket? And he said, yeah, I do. I said, now take the $50 out of your wallet in your pocket and put it into the cash register. He did. I said, now take your $50 gold coin out and put it in your pocket. I did. I said, now close the cash register. He did. I said, do your books balance? He said they do. I said, how much profit did you make on this transaction, Mackie? He said, let's see. Last week I wrote a check for $150 to Tyndall, and I bought a ton and a half of alfalfa pellets, and I turned around and sold the alfalfa pellets to you, George, for $50. I suffered a $100 loss. I said, oh my God, Mackie, that's bad business. And he said, yeah, that is bad business. I said, but bad business isn't against the law. Tax evasion is. Fraud is. Theft is. Bad business isn't. Now, boys and girls, all the time, you go down to Osco, Buttry, or Rexall Drugs, and they'll have a two-for-one sale or a one-cent sale, and you walk in, and they got a big sign, and it says, binders, $1.99, and a second one for a penny. So for $2, you can get two binders. Well, you don't have to be too smart to figure out what's going on here. What happens is they pay a dollar for those binders. And so they've got a leader here. And so they advertise the binder for $1.99, so they're doubling their money. They've got a Keystone markup in it. And then they offer you the second one for a penny, which means that they're going to sell you two binders. And they bought them for $2, and they're going to sell them to you for $2, so it's a push. They don't lose anything, but they don't make anything. But they got you in the store. And while you're in the store, you're going to buy some other stuff. And the thing that sucked you into the store was the binders. Now, that's just called a lost leader. But the fact that they sell you that and they lose money on it isn't against the law, is it? Now, I also teach a class on business. Now, you went to public school, but they didn't teach anything about law, money, or business. And people are unable to do business. They're unable to discern law. They don't understand the law, so they write me a letter and they say, well, gee, how am I going to function out here in the real world? And the answer is very nicely. Very nicely. Practicing the law of God and dealing in gold and silver is very beneficial. I didn't make these laws. I didn't write Title 31 of the U.S. Code. Congress wrote it. I just take advantage of it. That's all. And after all, that's all lawyers do. And politicians write these kinds of laws for their own benefit. They didn't write that for George Gordon's benefit. They wrote that for their own benefit. They wrote that for the gold company's benefits and the brokers and the stockbrokers and the gold brokers. They write those laws. Those lobbyists go into Congress and say, we want these laws passed. And they pass them. Take advantage of them. That's all. Now, you don't have to be a lawyer to do that. You just have to learn how to read the law. Now, there's nothing illegal about this transaction. You could make it illegal. Now, if I went over there and I gave Mackie a Krugerrand, now the Krugerrand has to be traded at what's known as the fair market value rule. It's worth $500, 500 Federal Reserve notes. But a U.S. gold coin, a $50 U.S. gold coin, is not worth $500. And if you want to test it, just take it down to the IRS and tell them you want to pay your taxes and you want $500 credit on your taxes for this $50 gold coin, and you'll find out how much it's worth. One time, a guy by the name of Nelson wanted to pay a filing fee, so he went into the U.S. District Court in Denver, Colorado, to pay a $120 filing fee. He gave him two $50 gold pieces and a $25 gold piece, and they gave him a $5 Federal Reserve note in change. They charged him $120 in gold coin. Now, that was what we call in law a test case. I'm going to find out, do the courts know how much gold and silver is worth? You betcha. They know. They know. Now, Nate, you can rest assured that when you go down to Walmart and present your $50 gold coin, they're not going to take it because they don't know what the hell to do with it. So what you do is you go down to the local businessman over here, take him to lunch, and when you get him sit down or sat down over at Skeeter's, you can explain it to him. Maybe you need to go through my business school before you try to explain that to Skeeter, but or to Mackey or somebody, but, you know, we teach that here in the law school. The trick to all of this, boys and girls, is to obey all the laws all the time. The justice system deals with obedience to law. We don't run around saying the law is abolished and done away with and nailed to the cross with Jesus. That's preposterous poppycock. The law that says thou shalt not steal is still in full force and effect. It's against the law to use unjust weights and balances. Stop using unjust weights and balances. Stop having income. Deal in property. Of course, to most of you listening to me, oh my God, I don't understand this guy speaking some kind of a foreign language. That's right. I don't deny it. We're speaking a foreign language. You've been to public school. You haven't gotten your education out of the Bible, King James, or any other version. You got your education out of the public school system. The public school system taught you exactly what you need to know to be a slave. It's the design of it. When the blind lead the blind, they both fall in the ditch. Americans are not being dumbed down for no good reason, boys and girls. We can't have slaves that can read. We can't have slaves that think. We've got to have people who can work. And we've got them. Now, if you think I'm trying to free the slaves, put it out of your mind. I'm not here to free the slaves. If you freed all the slaves, who in the hell is going to do the work? You have to have slaves. Americans are really down on slavery. They're really bummed out. And so we have a 13th Amendment in our Constitution that abolishes slavery. God gave us slavery. Did you know that? God gave us polygamy and slavery, and we abolished polygamy, and we abolished slavery. Well, you know, that it fits. After all, God didn't know what the hell he was doing, and we had to fix his mistakes. I mean, any dumb God that would give us polygamy? Well, of course we had to fix that law. And then slavery? Well, of course we had to fix that law. And you know, we've been busy, boys and girls, fixing God's laws for 4,000 years. Did you know that? 3,000 years since Mount Sinai. So if you think God made a mistake, well, then you just stay right where you're at. You need to stay right here with the Roman civil law. You need to practice the law that your kinder and gentler lawmakers give you. I mentioned this to you earlier. I'm not sure you people are really ready for the justice system. You might want to think about the justice system versus the Roman civil law adversarial system. Because the adversarial system, they can tolerate sodomy. They can tolerate theft by Federal Reserve notes and credit cards and income tax. The Roman civil law can tolerate the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. The civil law cannot tolerate the 10 commandments. And the civil law and your government cannot tolerate and will not tolerate the law of God, the 10 commandments, and the justice system, and that's why they've abolished all three. And that's the way that game is played. So there's your questions, there's your answers, and there's the story on lawyers. And we're just about out of time, so I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here, and we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, with something new to talk about. Keep in mind that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.